And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
Welcome, everyone. It's great to be back. Happy New Year. Yes, I said it. Happy New Year. Start a new liturgical year last Saturday. So Happy New Year's to everybody. And as we begin this season of Advent, and man, we're going to start off the liturgical new year with a bang. This is going to be a fantastic week here at the Virgin Most Powerful Apologetics Dojo. Got some awesome guests in store for you. Friday, this Friday, we're going to have the one who started it all, got the modern apologetics movement rolling. Carl Keating's going to come to the dojo, talk about, basically give his story about how he began apologetics, the early Wild West days, and I have to tell you, it was pretty wild back when Carl started. And then this Wednesday, we're going to have our good buddy, master apologist Carlo Brassard, come to the dojo, talk about scientism. Is science really the only reliable way in which we can know things about life and the world around us? Carl's going to blow that out of the water for us. Tomorrow, we're going to have my good friend Steve Weidenkopf, who's, as you know, is a historian, wrote several great books, and he's going to talk about the glory of the Crusades. Crusades, so many misrepresentations and myths about the Crusades. Steve's done some great work in there, and I can't wait to pick his brain. And the second half of the show, I am pleased to announce that we're going to have Rod Bennett back on. Rod, of course, is a convert, author, and he's going to talk about the apostasy that wasn't. The apostasy that wasn't. You know, every non-Catholic group out there has their own apostasy theory where the Christian church started off fine and dandy, and then at some point in history, supposedly, there was a great apostasy, and what was left was the Catholic Church. And so, you know, this is probably the biggest myth of all, even more than the Crusades. And so Rod's going to come on and show us how he tackled the great apostasy myth and how he completely debunked it. Coming up also in this hour, we're going to talk about the news. There's actually a couple of really interesting articles in the news that's related to defending the faith. You'll be surprised to hear about that, such as we have further confirmation of the historicity of Pontius Pilate. So you don't want to miss that. And, of course, we'll do our exercises. Finding the fallacy. Today's fallacy for today is the fallacy of division. And we're also going to meet the early church father, Clement of Alexandria. So I know we're having some technical problems on YouTube, but nevertheless, I'd like to give a shout-out for those who are watching live stream to this beautiful test pattern on Facebook and YouTube. Hi, everybody. I can see you on the forums. Lucy, M's phone, and so on. Hello, everybody. It's great to see familiar names. Great to see some new names. And by the way, we are here because of you. So please spread the word about Virgin Most Powerful Radio. Social media, let your friends know. You know, not, if you haven't subscribed, subscribe. Like us. Do whatever you can. Because there's lots of great material. Jesus 911, Terry and Jesse show that needs to be get out there, let people know. All right. They say, even if we can't see you, Gary, we're glad, you know, we're blessed to see you and or hear you. And like I said, I have a face for radio and a voice for silent movies. So actually, not having the video live stream is a blessing, everybody. I mean, so after all, this is a penitential season, but it's a light penitential season. So you can still hear me, but you don't have to see me. All right, if you want to join the show, you know, if you have a question for our guest, Rod Bennett, give us a call, 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. Or you can send us your question via email at questions@handsonapologetics.com. And we'd be glad to answer questions, maybe even answer them on the air. And the Dojo mailbox does have a few letters in it. We probably won't be able to get to it today because I want to get Rod on here as soon as possible talk about the apostasy that wasn't. So we'll just maybe sometime later this week we'll get to the Dojo mailbox. But let me get to the news. There's a couple of very interesting news stories that's related to our faith and defending the faith. And this is a hat tip to the Times of Israel, who's reporting that a 2,000-year-old pilot ring might just have belonged to the notorious Jesus Judge. Is that right? It says an intriguing 2,000-year-old copper alloy ring bearing the inscription of Pilatus may be only the second artifact testing to the historicity of the infamous Pontius Pilate. Unearthed about 50 years ago, the ring was overlooked until it was recently investigated by research in which they uncovered an inscription on this ring, which basically says, of Pilate's. Now, the word Pontius, the name Pontius, is pretty common, but the word Pilate in the ancient world is very rare. And this was discovered while they were the archaeologists were excavating a section of Herod's burial tomb and palace in Herodium. And they discovered this ring, and it was kind of passed over as kind of a secondary artifact, but upon further research, it appears to have been inscribed with the words of Pilate. And if you put two and two together, scholars say it very well could be a ring that was owned by Pilate. Now, give you a little background, by the way. There was a time not too long ago where scholars kind of poo-pooed the whole idea that Pilate was an actual person. And it wasn't until we discovered what's known as the Pilate Stone, where an inscription mentions Pontius Pilate, that people have finally conceded, yes, he's a historical figure. Well, this ring, you know, just basically adds even more fuel to that fire that, yes, indeed, when we say in the creed, suffered under Pontius Pilate, that, yes, indeed, Jesus did suffer under this historical figure. Another news item before we get to the other stuff, very quickly, because I'm running out of time. The second miracle of Cardinal John Henry Newman has been confirmed. And so Blessed John Henry Newman may be canonized as early as next year, according to the Catholic Herald. Bishop Philip Egan of Portsmouth said in an email newsletter last week that it looks now that Newman might be canonized, all being well, later next year. He still has only two more hoops to jump through before he's a canonized saint, which is he has to be, approved by a congregation, approved by the Commission of Bishops, and a declaration by Pope Francis. So please keep that in your prayers. It would be great. As you know, John Henry Cardinal Newman wrote a very formative book on the development of doctrine. He's one of the most well-known converts of the last century. And I know personally some people like Dave Armstrong, who came into the Catholic Church by reading John Henry Cardinal Newman's books. They're not easy, by the way. They're not very easy to read. On development of Christian doctrine, it's okay. Some of his other stuff is very heady. So just FYI, if you're a newbie, you might not want to start with his writings. But if you're into apologetics, you definitely need to know and be involved in it. All right, it's time for exercises, everybody. It's the dojo, so we got to work out our brains so we can be sharp swords for Christ to defend them and share them with the world. Our fallacy for today is the fallacy of division. And this is a fun fallacy because what it is it assumes that if something's true of the whole, it must be true of all the parts or some of the parts. Okay, so if something's true of the whole, then it must be true with some of the parts or all of the parts, which of course isn't necessarily true. For example, one example I found on the internet is the second grade class eats lots of ice cream. Carlos is a second grader in that class, therefore he eats a lot of ice cream. So what's true of the class in general isn't necessarily true for all the particulars. Okay? So that would be the fallacy of division, where you assume that just because it's true in general of the whole, then it must be true of every single part. And that could be used in lots of different ways as well. So that's our fallacy for today, the fallacy of division. for our early church father for today is Clement of Alexandria. Titus Flavius Clemens was born of pagan parents, probably in Athens, about the year 150 AD. After becoming Christian, he journeyed to Italy, Syria, Palestine, seeking Christian instruction, and he finally met famous Pantaenus in Alexandria. Pantaenus was a very early church father who still had the preaching of the apostles ringing in his ear. So he was a hearer of the apostles, very close to the time of the apostles. And so Clement became a pupil of Pantaenus, and ultimately he succeeded him as director of the school of catechetics in Alexandria somewhere around 200 AD. After two or three years, he was forced to, by persecution, to flee to Egypt. He died in Cappadocia somewhere between 211 and 216 AD. He's written three major works. Two of the most important ones is his Exhortation to the Greeks, which was written about the year 200, which he defends Christianity against the pagans. But what's interesting, he's not so much defensive as offensive, and he tries to show how the Christian reason, Christian logos, has been revealed to people of the world throughout history. So it's the first work that basically is a theology of history. His other work is called The Instructor, where he basically gives an instruction for the education of faith in terms of, once again, this divine logos, wisdom, as being manifested not only in Scripture, but even outside of Scripture. All right, so that's our early church father for today, Clement of Alexandria. When we return, we're going to talk to Rod Bennett, find out about whether or not the Christian church apostatized and became the Catholic Church.
This is Terry Barber inviting you to the upcoming Spiritual Warfare Conference, January 11th and 12th at the Sacred Heart Chapel in downtown Covina. If you go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org, you can join us with that, or call us at 877-526-2151. Jesse Romero will be there, Father Wolfgang will be there, and our very own Matt Arnold will be there, and I'll be the MC. Don't miss out on this wonderful event, January 11th and 12th.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. We desperately need to fix the bugs so you can listen live on our app or YouTube without any glitches. Plus, meet traditional broadcast standards in order to provide our exclusive programming to Catholic radio stations around the country and around the world, absolutely free of charge. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. You have entered the Virgin Most Powerful Apologetics Dojo. And I'm pleased to invite back. I was just looking at the chat room on the break, and you know, which Bennett is Gary's guest again? Well, it's not Tony Bennett. It's not Isaiah Bennett. It's Rod Bennett. And Rod, by the way, is for many years was the editor of Wonder Magazine, a cult favorite media journal. He's the author of Four Witnesses, The Early Church in Her Own Words. And he also is the author of a science fiction novel, The Christus Experiment. Rod lives in Tennessee with his wife, Dorothy, and two children. And also he has the book, and you need to pick this up if you haven't, The Apostasy That Wasn't, by Catholic Answers Press. Rod, welcome to Hands on Apologetics.
It's good to be here again. Gary, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Yeah, happy liturgical New Year.
And you too.
Yeah, in fact, you know, a friend of mine, Dan Egan, I'm not sure if you know him. He lives in Northern Kentucky, had a liturgical New Year party, which was kind of neat. So I couldn't make it, but that's what I did for New Year's. Was there any special tradition for you in the Bennett household?
For the Advent, arrival
sure.
of Advent?
Yeah.
We come from a family which didn't know from Advent, so we weren't into the church calendar when I was being raised. But around here, I guess we go to church, but I haven't yet adopted a custom of throwing a liturgical New Year party, but it's a good idea.
Yeah, I thought it is fun. It is funny. It's they periodically sing a verse from O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, and then they party and eat and do a prayer, sing another verse, and it's very nice. But anyway, you know, speaking of...
A bit more restrained than the other kind of New Year party.
That's right, yes. Yeah, because it's liturgical, right?
There we go.
Okay, so anyway, you mentioned your background. Maybe if you could you kind of tell us a little bit about more of your background and how you kind of became interested in Catholicism, eventually became Catholic?
Goodness, that's a long story, but I guess I'll begin by saying grew up in a Baptist home in the South, imbibed the Baptist spirit for good and for ill. Most of it was good. It converted me to the Christian religion and made, you know, somebody who wanted to be a disciple of Christ. So I have that kind of gratitude that I need to always express whenever I bring these issues up.
Yes.
There were limits, though, to what the Baptists could do for me. I asked questions that they didn't really have good answers to, so I had to move on and seek answers to the unanswered questions in places like the early church fathers. And to make a very long story short, C.S. Lewis led me to G.K. Chesterton. G.K. Chesterton led me to John Henry Newman. John Henry Newman led me to the early church fathers, and his job was about done by that point.
Now, in your story, you know, I love the story about, was it the Fields of the Woods in where you visited the shrine of that purported to be the restoration of Jesus's church?
Right. It's a very interesting story. It's how I opened up the book, The Apostasy That Wasn't. A trip made in the 80s, totally innocent, not knowing what I was getting myself into, but a friend and I, both evangelical Christians, visited a tourist site in the mountains of North Carolina called Fields of the Wood, which we imagined from what we heard about was just a pretty typical expression of Southern roadside piety. Supposedly they had a big copy of the Ten Commandments that covered a whole mountainside, and they had replicas of the tomb of Christ and all sorts of other things of a not all that dissimilar to a lot of other little evangelistic a shrine is an odd word to use for evangelical Christians because they don't really use that themselves and don't think in those terms usually of holy places and
right.
Places where you need to take your shoes off because you're walking on holy ground and stuff. They know that's in the Bible, but they're not real accustomed to it or used to it in the modern world. But when we got to Fields of the Wood, we found out that, yeah, it had all the Bible land type attractions, but it also was built on a site that was considered holy ground by the people that built it. And it was the way back around the turn of the 20th century. It was a place where a kind of a, you know, mountain prophet by the name of A.J. Tomlinson believed that he had heard a word from God, and it essentially amounted to a restoration of pure Christianity, a restoration of the church itself to the earth after an absence of 1,700 years or something. In other words, the idea was that Christianity got lost at the time of the Emperor Constantine, and that the covered over, I think, is the phrase they use, by creeds. The Bible was replaced by creeds, and the real gospel was covered over by the traditions of men. And that Reverend Tomlinson had prayed all night on a mountaintop to God to reveal the truth to him, and he came down believing that he'd had experienced a vision and that the church had been restored and the Holy Spirit was ready to go to work again on the earth. And so thus Fields of the Wood is a holy place.
Yeah.
And that's the now that's an interesting story. Not odd just from a Catholic point of view, but also from a Baptist point of view, because that's not what we Baptists believed either. We you know, the more extreme forms of you know, Pentecostal or charismatic Christianity teach that the kind of outpouring of gifts of tongues that began to happen right around this time, around the turn of the 20th century, were, you know, as Baptists, we weren't any more comfortable with that than we were with the Catholic religion. But we, so that would have been an extreme and odd point of view, even to most evangelicals. But as we began to go around and read all the historical markers and all their various literature and that explained what they believed happened there, you know, we got curious and tried to, you know, figure out whether they really believed that they were the only true Christians on earth, et cetera, et cetera. We got our noses rubbed in this idea of the great apostasy, that that something had happened when Christianity was legalized and supposedly made the official religion of the Roman Empire under the Emperor Constantine, who ruled in the early 4th century, the 330s and 340s A.D., that something had happened that had caused shipwreck to the whole faith, and that the real, true Christian religion had been lost. And we got our noses rubbed in this idea long enough, for me at least, to begin to realize that as odd as Fields of the Wood had seemed to me when I first visited, it actually was just simply a more straightforward and upfront version of something that I myself believed and that really most Protestants believe. I almost would say all Protestants. And that is the idea that the early church went off the rails at some point, that the church founded by the apostles and kept pure in the early days of the, what we called the New Testament church, New Testament Christianity, somewhere along the way, Constantine's era was a very common scapegoat. Many, many people would place it there. A few other groups place it later in church, a little later in church history. But the practically, I was confronted by the fact that I had a great apostasy theory of my own, and that really every non-Catholic form of Christianity has some sort of great apostasy conspiracy theory buried at the center of it. Because if you believe that the apostles founded a pure church and taught it pure doctrine, and that your church teaches pure doctrine today and is in a good condition, but everybody knows the Catholic faith was large and in charge for 1,000 years. Well, something happened, and you're forced to come to some sort of a historical conspiracy theory about that moment when the church went off the rails.
Yeah, that's not only true for Christians though, but like Plotinus believed that Jesus was a good pagan, and that the Christians distorted him and made him into a Catholic. And then the Muslims believe that Jesus was a good Muslim and that the Christians turned into like a Catholic figure. And so that's true not only for Protestants, but everybody else.
Right. One of these is recorded in the pages of the New Testament itself. It seems as if the Judaizers believed that the division that they perceived between Peter and Paul over the issue of whether Jewish converts had to keep the law amounted to a split amongst the apostles, and that therefore at least some of the apostles, usually they identified Paul as the head of this group, caused a great apostasy during the lifetime of the 12 apostles. So that, and of course, liberal Christianity has often picked St. Paul and singled him out as somebody who took the simple message of the Galilean fishermen and mixed it up with Greek philosophy and created something new that Christ hadn't taught. So from the very beginning, the idea of a conspiracy theory that bad guys tinkered with the message along the way and then doctored up the records afterwards has been there from the very beginning.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and like you said, every group has that implicitly in their story. Because
Another way of saying that is the Catholic religion is the only version of Christianity that says all is well, all has been well since day one. You know, there are better and, you know, in other words, no, we're still doing business. We've operated under the same management since 33 A.D., and the church is what it is. It's what it always has been.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I never thought of it
even
that
Eastern
way.
Eastern Orthodoxy. Yeah, even Eastern Orthodoxy, which claims to be the original Orthodoxy, of course, as they all do. Mm-hmm. Even Eastern Orthodoxy would have us believe that the majority of the world's Christians, and Eastern Orthodoxy is greatly outnumbered by worldwide by Catholics, members of the Catholic faith. Even Eastern Orthodoxy would have us believe that the majority of Christians have been seduced off into a sub-Orthodox version of the original faith, that teachers came along later on in the history and began to exalt the papacy and began to, you know, teach false things like the filioque and all the rest of it, and that that now, you know, their little minority. Admittedly, their minority is bigger than most.
Right.
But their little minority is the saving remnant, and you know, everybody else is barking up the wrong tree. But it all amounts to a conspiracy, a historically based theory. Keep in mind, by definition, none of this can be scriptural. These are all historical arguments.
Right. Okay, Rod, when we come back, we'll find out how you debunk this.
Matthew Arnold here, encouraging you to go to vmpr.org to register for our upcoming Spiritual Warfare Conference this January 11th and 12th at the Sacred Heart Chapel in Covina. Father Wolfgang will be speaking along with Jesse Romero, Terry Barber as MC, and yours truly, talking about spiritual warfare and the family. Protect your family now. Go to vmp.org and register for this conference. Don't miss it.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. We desperately need to fix the bugs so you can listen live on our app or YouTube without any glitches. Plus, meet traditional broadcast standards in order to provide our exclusive programming to Catholic radio stations around the country and around the world, absolutely free of charge. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber.
Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow, that's 80%. RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Explain to us the how all these groups have different apostasy theories, even orthodoxy, as you were mentioned after the break. And so Rod, obviously this figured as a very important part of your own journey to the Catholic Church. How did you start looking into whether or not there really was a apostasy?
Well, the trip to Fields of the Wood was just one of several converging lines in my life. I mentioned Lewis and Chesterton. These were Lewis, a Protestant writer, who nevertheless revered Chesterton, so that allowed me to go ahead and gave me permission to read a Catholic writer, which I may not have done without Lewis's imprimatur. But if you read carefully, they were talking about, they both had, Lewis, though he was a Protestant, had a pretty high Christology, and they both had a sense of the church through the ages. Lewis talks about how, you know, at one point that he was impressed with the idea of the church marching through history like an army with banners. And this idea of a historical church that has been there and been the church all through the ages is very different than what we grew up with. I mean, even in the kind of evangelicalism I grew up in, we weren't even all that crazy about Martin Luther or John Calvin or something. We never talked about them. They, you know, they had done the world some good by striking a blow against the papacy, but that was about all we would concede, you know. Mm-hmm. And so there were writers like Chesterton, Lewis, and others who gave me permission to go investigating these early church fathers, and especially then when I got on to the writings of Newman. Of course, Newman's really, his faith was saved, I think, by discovering the church fathers and getting deeply into their writing. So, and once you've got to the fathers, you've got the solution to the problem, because, you know, there is no great apostasy in the writings of the fathers, and also preserved in the writings of the fathers, like dinosaur fossils, is the records of what the early church was like. You know, it was easy to fall, and is easy for evangelicals and other types of Christians to fall for odd and obscure interpretations of the Bible, because they have nothing really to compare it to. They've got a Bible text, but they don't have a Talmud, if you see what I'm saying. They don't have an interpretation of the Bible that's venerable and that is ancient and that, as we do, that that dates from the earliest centuries. And it's really, really very important to not only have the Bible, an infallible word from God, but also to have not an infallible, but an ancient, venerable, and unified interpretation of the Bible from the early centuries. Because that is how you know how the Bible was understood by the men that were appointed by the apostles, and how you discern that the message that they received was believed everywhere that there were Orthodox Christians. Right. In other words, not only are the ancient teachings very old, they also agree to a miraculous extent. They agree with each other. You don't get a spectacle, as we do today, of any particular of opinions amongst Christian groups. In those days, you had people who were orthodox about the person of Christ, who said the same things about baptism, about the Eucharist, and all these other things. Yes, there were heretical groups, but these groups were already heretical, even by evangelical standards.
Yes.
So it's that's what we find, that preserved strata of dinosaur fossils, so to speak, that give us a picture of what the church was like in the ages immediately following the apostles.
Right. So what was that church? Tell us a little bit about the church between the apostles and, say, Constantine.
Well, it's very interesting. One of the best ways to refute the myth that Constantine changed everything, mm-hmm. That's implied in the Great Apostasy and spelled out pretty explicitly by various different theories. The Dan Brown Da Vinci Code made a big splash a few years back, which essentially says, comes right out and says in so many words that Constantine deliberately substituted a changeling into Christianity's cradle, that the original Christianity had not believed in, didn't teach the divinity of Christ. Christ was a sage or a wise man who, taught goddess worship and all sorts of other things. But this original version of Christianity had been supplanted by Constantine and his version that was doctored up to suit his purposes. And, that he selected a Bible that made up the books of the Bible and selected the Bible in order to back up his version, and he decanonized all the other scriptures about Jesus. And this conspiracy theory, this idea that everything changed after Constantine, only works if you don't know anything about first and second century Christianity.
Hmm.
In other words, you would never even write a book that suggested that if you realized how many thousands of pages of documentation we have of what late first and all through the second century, all through the third century Christianity, the first 300 years essentially of Christianity. You can make a conspiracy theory up if you believe that the thing is a blank spot on the map, as
right.
I did as an evangelical.
Yeah.
The average evangelical believes you can't know anything about the early church, that after the Bible, after the New Testament concludes, it's that there's nothing there.
Right.
And but you might write a crazy novel like Da Vinci Code if you were totally ignorant that all of this documentation existed, and I think that's exactly what happened. I think he was totally ignorant of that. But I don't think you'd write it if you realized that there's a very full picture of the early centuries, the first three centuries of Christianity in the writings of the early fathers. And it's the same as what the church was teaching 300 years after Constantine. There's
right.
absolute and complete continuity in the dogmas and the liturgy of the church before and after the legalization that happened under Constantine.
Right. Yeah, did you hear that, everybody? The church that was before Constantine is the same church that's after Constantine. Rod, let me ask you a real quick question.
Go ahead.
Why is it that there many Protestants don't see the early church fathers? That there's this, the New Testament was written, then it kind of leapfrogs to Martin Luther, and then Christian history kind of takes off. Why is there that blank spot?
Well, there's a spectrum of reasons for that. Some of them are pretty interesting. Islam, for example. Islam is essentially a Christian heresy. It's Muhammad was a simple camel trader in Arabia in the 7th century, and but unfortunately he grew up in a place where there was no Orthodox Christians. The population that he was surrounded with was about an equal mixture of Jews, pagans, the original pagans of Arabia, and about a third of Arian Christians, that is, sub-Orthodox Christians, Christians who didn't believe in the full divinity of Christ in the way that the Catholic Church believes it. And so he got a very distorted version of Christianity because he never got it from the horse's mouth. But one of the cornerstones of Islam is the idea, and a lot of people don't realize this, Islam believes in Moses, believes in the prophets, believes in many, if not most, of the events of Old Testament history, believes in Jesus Christ, believes that his mother was an Immaculate Virgin, and that when Jesus was born, and that that Jesus will come back at the end of time and judge mankind, not Muhammad. So, and they get this because they believe that originally the Old Testament and the Gospels were Islamic works, and that they were distorted and altered by the Jews and by the Christians, and to make, you know, a Christian Bible and a Jewish Bible, and that the original works were ruined or distorted. In other words, a conspiracy theory.
Right.
Okay. Now, in the 7th century, and then in later centuries, in the 1,000 years after that, you might legitimately, without real blatant moral error, entertain this idea. It's an absolute fact that before the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered in the 1940s, the earliest copy of the Hebrew Bible in existence dates from about the year 1000. In other words, the Middle Ages.
Hmm.
You know, the earliest manuscripts we have to this day all date from later. But since that time, we've discovered many. The Dead Sea Scrolls, for example, have a perfect copy of the book of Isaiah that dates from, you know, the time of Christ. So, and it's the same as in both the Christian and the Islam and the Jewish Bibles. So what I'm getting at is here is that a conspiracy theory can sometimes be believed for lack of evidence. In other words, it's true that there is no contemporary copy, even now, of the New Testament or the Old Testament. But there's no evidence at all for this original, unaltered Islamic version. And there's also the older, and we found many more copies of the New Testament and Old Testament books, or fragments of copies, since that time, that do date back now into the first century and into the era of the Dead Sea Scrolls. The Dead Sea Scrolls have hundreds of examples of Old Testament texts. And there's no evidence that there was some sort of unaltered original version.
Okay, very good. Well, hey, Rod, I hear the music on the other side of the break. Maybe you can tell us a little bit about what was going on during Constantine. And yeah, was there? Stay tuned, everybody.
This is Terry Barber. I want to invite you to the Spiritual Warfare Conference coming January 11th and 12th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. It's going to be fantastic. I want to encourage you to sign up by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. One of the speakers is sitting right next to me, Matthew Arnold. Matt, what are you going to be telling our folks about?
I'm going to tell them about my journey into the Catholic Church, because in my younger days, I was in the entertainment business. I was all involved with cult beliefs and practices like tarot cards and astrology and even channeling. And I had my own brush with the demonic.
Wow. Not only Matt, but Father Wolfgang from the Opus Angelorum, popular priest, he's welcome back. And our friend Jesse Romero, my partner on the Terry and Jesse Show, will be there. Don't miss it. Go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call us at 877-526-2151.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support, because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. As usual, we're doing it all on a shoestring budget, but we cannot do it without you. If you like what you hear on Virgin Most Powerful, I ask you to please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
Welcome back, everybody. Hands-On Apologetics. We're talking to Rod Bennett, Master Apologist, about the apostasy that wasn't. And Rod, you know, while we're on the break, I got a text from my daughter, Jennifer. Hi, Jennifer. And she asked me, well, why Constantine, if the church was the same before and after him, why does everybody make such a big deal about him?
Well, there's absolutely no question that something enormous happened when the Roman Empire went from being the great persecutor of Christians to the great sponsor of Christians. That's an enormous watershed, probably the most enormous watershed in Christian history, at least one of them. So something enormous happened at that point. The question is whether something enormous was done to the doctrine of the church. Right. I think the thing just looms large in people's imagination, and everybody's heard, you know, power corrupts and all of that, and they just simply assume that since we know that things start to look and sound Catholic around that time, the sponsorship of the Roman Empire corrupted the church, because we all are, especially as Americans, pretty skeptical of government. So it just seems a kind of a natural watershed. But we should have suspected, and I think I did suspect, that everybody shouldn't have their own different version of what happened what Constantine did. And that was a very striking thing to me, is that nobody could agree on their story. They all agree that Constantine had been the man that changed everything, but they all disagreed about what the change was. You know, for example, the Seventh-day Adventists make much of Constantine as the source of the great apostasy. They say that the church under his sponsorship dropped too much of the Old Testament law. Mm-hmm. Well, I knew that in my church we had said that he kept too much of it. That the Catholic Church reflects too many, laws and restrictions and stuff. Also, Dan Brown says that the Constantine invented the divinity of Christ. The Mormons say that he dropped the divinity of man.
You're right.
So, you can go down the list of things where everybody agrees Constantine is the villain, but we can't agree on what changes he made. In fact, everybody knows that he called the Council of Nicaea. Mm-hmm. And, for example, Dan Brown blames him for creating the Christian Bible as we know it, whereas A.J. Tomlinson, who was the prophet of Fields of the Wood, his big charge against Constantine was that he substituted his own creed in place of the Bible. So nobody could get their story straight.
Yeah, right.
And that was a guidepost. That was something that drove me back to say, look, exactly what did Constantine do? Well, he legalized Christianity. He sponsored it. He made reparations for the crimes that the emperors had committed against the Christian church through the centuries. And he allowed the Catholic bishops, whom he found in charge already on day one, to stay in charge of the churches, and he didn't interfere with them like later emperors did. Hmm. So that's what Constantine did. And you can verify this. This was the reason I brought up Islam in their supposedly original Islamic version of the Old and New Testaments. There's no evidence that there is such an Islamic version. Nobody's ever found anything like that. The same is true here. If you accuse Constantine of altering the original faith and making it Catholic, then why are the records of the early centuries so full of Catholicism and so there's so little evidence that there was anything like what Dan Brown teaches or evangelicals teach?
Right.
In other words, this is something they have in common with Islam here. If there is first century Presbyterianism or first century Baptist Christians, they ought to have left some record.
Right.
In other words, there ought to be Baptist church fathers or Presbyterian church fathers or, you know, you can go right on down the line with the various different denominations.
Right.
You go and you don't find them. You find all of the church fathers talking about the real presence of Christ in the Lord's Supper. You find them talking about baptismal regeneration. You find them talking about all these things that are hotly denied. A real priesthood, for example, a sacrificing Christian priesthood. All these things that are denied by the evangelical are there in the writings of the evangelical, of the original church fathers. But evangelical Christianity is not there. And so you're driven to what? Well, what they usually say is Constantine doctored the records. There really were evangelical church fathers, but the Catholic Church suppressed the writings and burned them all up and stuff. Well, we're back to conspiracy theory again. There's no record that anything like that ever happened. Some people say, at this point, we'll say, yeah, but okay, the Nicene Council condemned Arius, who denied the full divinity of Christ in the Catholic sense, and that absolutely is true that Arius's writings were burnt. Well, anybody who says that only knows half the story. Constantine did condemn Arius at the Council of Nicaea, and he did order his books burnt. But within a year and a half, Constantine had changed his mind completely, began sponsoring Arius, and allowed him to republish his books. How many people know that?
Yeah.
How many people know that Constantine's son became an active sponsor of Arianism and began to suppress Catholicism?
Yeah.
How does that figure into the idea that the Catholic Church, Constantine put the Catholics in charge and they doctored the records and burned everything that didn't agree with them? The Catholics weren't in charge through much of the 4th century. They were the Catholics were the persecuted minority during the age of the great Arian controversy in the mid-4th century. So the story doesn't make sense, the idea that this is where the Catholic Church went off the rails, and it doesn't make sense for many reasons. For one thing, the 300 years, the good records we have, those dinosaur fossils that I mentioned, of the first three centuries of Christianity are full of Catholicism. So nothing was invented at the time of Constantine. And the missing evangelical fathers are completely missing. And the ones that are still there are in agreement about the dogmas of their religion.
Right.
So, yes, like the Muslims, you can imagine that there's some sort of lost document that's going to turn up one day. But don't imagine that you're making a real argument. You're simply pressing a conspiracy theory that you've been driven to by the necessities of your position. It's
right.
Not based on anything historical at all.
Right. Yeah. In fact, you know, one argument that I've heard with Constantine is that by legalizing Christianity, there was this flood of pagans coming into the church, and then that the church became kind of pagan. But correct me if I'm wrong, Rod. Isn't like Arianism much more attractive to pagans than the Orthodox position on Jesus?
Yes. Well, that was the plan anyway. That's essentially what Arianism is.
Okay.
Is an attempt to make Christianity more palatable to the average Roman citizen, less mysterious in the technical sense, less full of things that the pagan mind can't understand, and turn Christ into another kind of demigod like Hercules or one of the other sons of Zeus that the Romans were very familiar with in their pagan religion. And instead of him being Christ being the creator of the universe in the full eternal sense, they turn him into a kind of a demigod like Apollo. And that was one of the reasons that Arianism was created, was to try to smooth the way for these mass conversions of half Christian pagans. Okay, but that's right. Arianism doing that, not Catholicism.
Right.
Arianism warred against the Catholic Church, persecuted the Catholic bishops, imprisoned the popes. So, you know, there was somebody in those days trying to make the world safe for half-converted pagans, but it wasn't the Catholics.
Yeah,
it's a much more interesting story than your average person realizes. Also very complicated, though. It's a really great yarn, but one of the reasons that book took so long for me to write is that it's a really complicated story, which may be one of the reasons why most people don't know it very well.
Right.
But I guess this is a commercial for the apostasy that wasn't. But if you have all sorts of questions about what exactly did go down in the era of Constantine and the Arians, I'd encourage you to read the apostasy that wasn't. That's
all
the reason
right.
I wrote
well, hey,
it, because it wasn't a good one-stop source.
Yes, absolutely. Actually, that's a good way to end the program, too, because I recommend your book, The Apostasy That Wasn't, because, like I said, everybody has apostasy theories. Hey, Rod, how can people get a hold of your works and learn about what you're doing?
Well, if you want the books, it's the easiest. I've published with several different publishers, so the easiest way is just to go to Amazon, because there's a Rod Bennett Amazon author page, and they're all there. But you can also go to the individual publishers, Ignatius Press, Catholic Answers Press. My latest book is coming out right now from Sophia Institute Press called Bad Shepherds, which is about bad Catholic clergy through the centuries.
Okay. Well, hey, we'll have to have you back on to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's, like I say, it's hitting the presses right. Well, it's actually off the presses, and it's hitting the retailers right now. So, Bad Shepherds from Sophia Institute Press.
All right, Rob. Well, hey, thanks again for visiting us and telling us about the apostasy. All right. God bless. Well, that was Rod Bennett. Man, lots of information. And like I said, it's a very helpful book. Not only his The Apostasy That Wasn't, but also his Four Witnesses book. Fantastic stuff, because here at the dojo, you know, we love the early church fathers, and Rod's done some really great work with the early church fathers. So like I said, you know, avail yourself of that source, because we want to evangelize, we want to defend the faith, and we need good weapons to do that, good techniques. Just everybody, hey, tomorrow's program, we're going to have Steve Weidenkopf come on, and he's going to talk about the Crusades. A lot of myths about the Crusades, especially when family gatherings coming up. You want to have answers, so you can get it here at Virgin Most Powerful Radio. You won't want to miss tomorrow's program. Please support Virgin Most Powerful Radio in your prayers. Let your friends know about us, because, like I said, we want to spread the word. We want to get lots of defenders for the faith. Coming up next, we have the Terry and Jesse Show. The dynamic duo of Catholic Talk Radio. And, you know, it's hard to believe, but it's time for me to turn off the lights of the dojo and shut down the Midwest Command Center here. It's been a pleasure talking to you. And like I said, coming up this week, we've got great guests. Spread the word, everybody. Defend the faith with clarity and charity. I'm Gary Machuda. Great day.
Scripture tells us that David beat Goliath with a sling and 5 smooth stones. Funny, the rosary looks kind of like that. The rosary is a Catholic devotional prayer. A set of 1 Our Father followed by 10 Hail Marys is called a decade. You do 5 decades and you have a rosary. And for each decade, we meditate on a mystery from Jesus' life. So the prayers we're breathing in and out set the stage for an encounter with the Word of God. Do a quick search online for the mysteries of the rosary, which are different for each day of the week. What I really love about old school Catholic devotionals like this is simplicity. I'll be honest, it's not always easy to pray or to lead my family in prayer. What do I do? What do I say? Rosary, problem solved. Look, every family's a mess in its own special way. Bring God into the mess. Your family's problems might be Goliaths. Maybe the solution's as simple as a sling and 5 smooth stones. This is Chris Stefanik from RealLifeCatholic.com.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.